I've said before that I think the Pharisees are the people that we love to hate. Judging from what Jesus says in Matthew 23, perhaps our animosity toward them is somewhat well-founded. But it's still kind of a cautionary, well-founded animosity. Because Jesus is really concerned here that the disciples might fall into some of the same patterns. You know, when you demonize somebody, you always think you're not like them. And you have to be very careful with that, because sometimes when you demonize somebody, you do become like them in some ways. Or maybe you're demonizing the things in them that sometimes you do yourselves. We are prone to the same mistakes. And I think that's what makes this a kind of cautionary tale. We can even kind of be prideful that we're not like them. You know, we study the story of the Pharisee and the publican in Luke chapter 19, I think it is, or 18, where, you know, two men come to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee, one a publican. And, you know, the Pharisee says, well, man, I'm sure glad I'm not like other men. I do such and such and such and such. And the publican's off. He's way away from the presence of God. He says, I don't even deserve to be here. And, you know, that's the guy we want to emulate. But in a way, sometimes Satan has a way of turning our humility into pride. We're sort of prideful. We're not like other men. You know, and we end up kind of making the same mistake in a little different way than the Pharisee made. Spiritual snobbery is still a sin that lurks everywhere, and we have to be cautious of it. And so today, as we look at this passage, really my outline is really fairly simple today. Here's what the Pharisees did, but here's what we're supposed to do. And there are several characteristics that we see in them that Jesus has decried in other places, but it kind of comes to light here, and it's probably his forthrightness here that gets him more and more in trouble with these leaders of the Jewish people. So we're going to look at what they did versus what we're supposed to do today. The first thing we notice in verse 3 about the Pharisees or the scribes and all the people, it says they preach, but they don't practice what they preach. Jesus has already revealed in any number of ways the importance of actually doing the will of God. If you turn back to Matthew chapter 7, he's made it really pretty clear here that the point of all of what he's telling them is that for them to do these things, they're not just there for us to discuss and figure out, they're there for us to do. Matthew 7 verse 21 says, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven." And perhaps this strikes right at the very heart of the sort of, performing a lot of religious duties, but not really having in your heart the desire to obey. And if that's not sufficient enough, Jesus goes on and he tells a story about a foolish man and a wise man. And every time that I've gone through this story with most people, they look at it and I say, all right, what's the difference between the wise man and the foolish man? Well, we know the story. The wise man built his house on the rock. When the storm came, he was fine. His house stood. But the foolish man built his house on sand, and when the storm came, his house fell apart. But if you look a little deeper, there's only one difference between the two guys. Because Jesus says, the wise man is like a man who looks at the words of God and puts them into practice. The foolish man is a man who looks at the words of God and does not put them into practice. That's the only difference between the two people. And I think this is a brilliant stroke here on the part of Jesus to put this particular story at the end of his longest single Sermon on the Mount. The point is, that's the way we're supposed to live. And the Pharisees, we know, as Jesus pointed out to them in a number of ways, they avoided obedience in any number of ways. In Matthew chapter 15, verses 8 and 9, and throughout that whole section, Jesus says, yeah, they just make traditions of men. They try to obey me by obeying words of men, not words of God. They kind of made up the rules as they went along, made it, you know, good for themselves. And Paul addresses the very same thing in Romans chapter 2, the other passage that was read this morning. And he says to the people, to the Jewish, his own Jewish brethren, he says, look, you want to call yourself Jewish? are an Israelite and you want to say that you're an instructor of the wise, you know the laws of God, you tell people what they're supposed to do, do you turn around when you tell people don't rob temples? Do you rob temples yourself? If you tell people, don't commit adultery, but you turn around and commit adultery, is that the way you're supposed to live? So Paul's seeing the same thing acted out over and over again, even later on after Jesus is gone, and he addresses it in the book of Romans. And he's really just trying to say to everybody, you've all sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Well, I guess the fairly obvious lesson, what should we do? Practice what you preach. That's the message, isn't it? The emphasis being on practice here. Because if we don't practice what we preach, what's everybody going to think? What do your words mean? Probably don't mean anything without some actions to back them up. And I'd kind of like to say this in a little different way as well. Practice before you preach. Maybe that's a pretty good rule for our evangelistic efforts. You see, whenever you share your faith, your life is on display, isn't it? They're not just going to hear your words. They want to see what you do. And, we live in an age, I think, when the world is ready and willing to pounce on every mistake Christians make. You're not going to get a break. Now, I don't want you to feel like, oh, gosh, I can't be perfect, because you're not going to be perfect. But are we not supposed to strive for the practice part of our faith and not just the preaching part? It's good to be able to preach and evangelize and share the gospel, but let's make sure the practice part is in place as well, because that's what's going to make our preaching really, really meaningful. You won't be perfect, but you can strive to practice first. And I'm pretty sure that most people, when they see that, even if they don't like your preaching, they're going to have to say, well, the person still is, they live what they preach. For the most part, you're not going to be perfect, but they live it. That's going to have a bigger impact than just your words. So practice what you preach. Practice before you preach. Pretty good words, I think, from Jesus. The next thing we see that the Pharisees do is they tie heavy burdens on people's backs, but they won't lift them themselves. And I think this is kind of an extension of the not practice what they preach thing. It's an extension of it. They not only don't practice what they preach, but they compound the problem. They make it bigger by telling everybody else what they're supposed to do. And it's very interesting the way Jesus expresses this here. They're not willing to move the burdens themselves. But notice something here. He says they're not even willing to use their finger. They won't even lift a finger to move them. How many burdens do you know of you can lift with a finger? Most people, it takes a lot more than a finger. Jesus says, you know what? They are so intent on not helping people lift their burdens, they won't even go to the point of lifting up their finger to do so. This is an exaggeration here on Jesus' part that I think has a very powerful effect. These people really wouldn't, they just didn't want to do anything. They wanted to look good but not do anything, but I get ahead of myself. I think there's a very subtle thing that happens to us in a lot of ways. We really expect more of everybody else than we do of ourselves sometimes. And that's kind of a common human mistake that we make, okay? And it's kind of easy. It's easy to expect everybody else to do things, but then it takes, because it kind of takes the burden off of me. Now, I'm not sure all the ways that they did what Jesus is suggesting here, but I know that there are some things they did. We know some of the things he told us about in other parts of the gospel. And I think today there's a subtle way this sometimes expresses itself, kind of in the economics of socialism. Margaret Thatcher was always fond of saying, socialism is great until you run out of other people's money to spend. In whole schools of thought, in individual ways we treat one another, we kind of expect other people to do things that we don't particularly want to do ourselves. We'd rather unburden ourselves than put the burden on somebody else. I think that's kind of a human trait of sinful humanity. That's what we do. And think about the hypocrisy of Judas in this. Remember what Judas did? Judas was the guy who kept the money bags. He was the treasurer of the disciples. And when somebody took a very expensive item, a woman who took this expensive perfume and anointed Jesus' feet with it, he complains. And the first thing he says is, well, that money could have been given to the poor. We shouldn't be allowing her to do that. And John makes the comment, and you know, I'm guessing that the disciples suspected somewhere along the line that somebody was taking a little money out of the treasury. And I think they found out for sure later on that Judas was the guy that was doing it. But he says Judas didn't really care about the poor. And Judas expected somebody else to do it, not himself. Judas didn't want to burden himself, so that money should have been, she should have given that money to the poor. He wanted others to do what he was unwilling to do himself. So what should we do? What's our role as Christians? Well, don't ask people to do something you aren't willing to do yourself. You know, should we always be placing burdens on other people? You know, servants are not exempt from works of service. You know, it seems maybe even too obvious to say that, but isn't that the case? Servants are not exempt from works of service. Shoulder your own burdens first. I want you to turn to the book of Galatians for a moment. There's kind of an interesting juxtaposition here that Paul makes in his ideas about what he's telling the Galatian church. I want you to take a look, first of all, at Galatians chapter 6, verses 4 and 5. He says to them, "But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor. For each one will have to bear his own load." See, Paul wants to make sure that everybody there in the Galatian church is pulling their weight. You can't just shift the burden to somebody else all the time. Now, what's interesting about that to me is he has just gotten through telling them also what he says in verse 2. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. So, somewhere between bearing others' burdens and willing to bear your own burden is kind of where most of us have to live our Christian life and express our discipleship. Okay? And I think what I can come out with that, what conclusion I can draw with that is when Paul says bear one another's burdens, he's not saying to them, okay, let everybody else bear your burdens for you. Bear mine for me. Because in the very same breath, he says, make sure everybody bears their own load. Now, there are times in our lives, are there not, when we need somebody to kind of walk with us and bear our burdens for us and just hold us up. You know, it's like a wounded soldier. You know, somebody's got to carry him off the battlefield. Maybe that happens to us occasionally. We get wounded and we need somebody to help bear our burdens for us. Or we run on a string of bad luck or something, or just some things happen to us. And we need other people to help kind of shoulder it with us a little bit. Aren't you happy when you have good friends who can do that? Or somebody in your life who you can go and talk to and just feel like, you know, even just talking about it with them helps bear the burden for me a little bit. We need that. At the same time, Paul will tell the Thessalonians in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 12, he says, be dependent on no one. And Paul is saying that in the context of make sure you work with your hands to go and earn your own money. Again, that does not mean that there's not a time that maybe sometimes I run into some difficulties and I need a little bit of help from somebody. But the point is, you make sure you do everything in your power to be dependent on no one. Let me say it this way, and I think this is perhaps what Jesus is trying to say here. Don't ask people to do for you what you really should do for yourself. Responsibility and help. Responsibility and help. There are times we have to do maybe a little of both. We're certainly going to need some help. But make sure our main attempt is simply don't tie burdens on everybody else. You be willing to lift the burden for yourself first before you ever go and ask for any help. The third thing that I think is very clear here that Jesus does not want the disciples to do is he points out that the Pharisees do everything for show. It's all to look good. He says they do their deeds to be seen by others. Now, the things he mentions here, I think, are very interesting because none of these things are really even the kind of good deeds that we expect, that, or at least are expected of us to do for others. Look at what he says here. He talks about, let's go back, I'm sorry, I had you in Galatians. You can go back to Matthew 23. Look at the things he says here. Number one, showy clothing. Okay. Do we just make our phylacteries long? I mean, we don't wear that kind of stuff now, but does the clothing we wear make us look more religious? I don't think Jesus is saying don't wear nice clothes. But the things they were doing to make them look more religious. He talks about how they love the places of honor. He talked about how they love being greeted in the marketplace. He talked about how they love the best seats at feasts and in the synagogue. How they love the recognition of being a really religious person. You know, and again, they really weren't even the kind of good deeds, the good works that Paul and others will talk about in the letters later on. Now, Jesus goes on here in verses 25 through 28, and he points out the real problem with them. Because in verses 25 through 28, Jesus says, look, inwardly, they are really full of greed, self-indulgence, hypocrisy, and lawlessness. That's 25 through 28. He calls them whitewashed tombs. He says, you clean the outside of the cup, but you've left the inside filthy and dirty. Their shows of righteousness simply were masks for their unrighteous behavior. What we should do? Well, you know, again, isn't it obvious what we should do? Don't do everything just to be seen as a religious person. Jesus has already told the disciples how they're supposed to perform their religious acts. In Matthew chapter 6, Jesus talks about giving to the poor, he talks about praying, and he talks about fasting. And in every one of them, he says, do them in such a way that only God sees you. In fact, I'm always intrigued with the one where he says, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. You know, I mean, that's pretty private. If my left hand doesn't even know what my right hand is doing, that's pretty private, okay? And if I give something, I'm not supposed to toot my own horn about it. Or if I pray, I'm not supposed to pray so everybody can see me praying. Now, it's not bad for people to know that you are a person of prayer, but do you always have to be showing everybody you're praying? Or do you always have to be, as he says, when they fasted, they disfigured their faces. Oh, I'm suffering so much because I'm fasting, you know? Jesus says, clean yourself up. Nobody has to know but you and God. You don't have to do it for show. Hypocrites love to have others know that they have done these things. You know what he says? He says, yeah, okay, you can do that if you want to, but you got your reward. Your reward is everybody knows. I think I'd kind of rather have God reward me on those things if I'm going to get rewarded at all. Do good things, but do them quietly, knowing that Christ sees what you do. In 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 25, Paul makes a very interesting comment there. He says, you know, people's good deeds will be obvious. You don't need to call attention to them. People will see them at some point. You're not trying to show them off, but hopefully your light will shine. But in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 16, Jesus makes it very clear that the reason our lights are to shine is so that our good works glorify God, not ourselves. It's a real different internal mechanism, isn't it, for us to say we're going to do something good and it doesn't matter who sees it because God sees it. We don't have to show off our righteousness. So don't do everything just to be seen by other people. And are not the conclusions here really fairly simple for our lesson? Practice what you preach. Ask yourself, am I being the wise man who built on the rock or the foolish man who built on sand? One heard and obeyed, the other heard and did not obey. Simple difference. Realize what you expect of others you should be doing as well. Ask yourself, how can I lift the burdens of other people? How can I bear my own burdens? At the proper time, when you really need burden bearing, hopefully somebody will be there for you. Why? Because God has seen it, and I think He'll reward you for that. The third thing is, do things for God to see, not just for others to see. Ask yourself, do I want a reward from God or a reward from others? Well, you know who's going to give you the best reward. Seek that particular reward. Simple rules, are they not, to keep you from falling prey to the sins of the Pharisees? If you do them, I believe you will be a true disciple of Jesus Christ.